This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
The DNA underneath the fingernails, that's another thing that the defense was, you know, trying to bring up, it seems, here for a little bit. I don't know if they're going to keep going on that, but the DNA of three different people under the fingernail of one of the victims. I don't know. I'm always cleaning my fingernails. I always have like something around here where I'm like, it's an obsession. And there's, you know, just go throughout your day, you get stuff underneath your fingernails. And I'm assuming probably a lot of DNA. This, you know, go to the store, touch a railing, you know, just inadvertently scratch your hand on something. You will very likely get DNA under your fingernails. Just how often is it that at any given time we have other people's DNA under our fingernails, but we're not the victim of a violent crime?
Sure. I mean, it could be a very innocent explanation for that. Like you said, just picked up. You're in college town. There's kids everywhere. You're hanging out at parties and socializing and everything else. On the other hand, defense can certainly argue that there was a physical altercation here. And oftentimes in a physical altercation, there is scratching and an exchange of biological material, including material that gets lodged underneath fingernails. And could that be evidence of someone who was involved in a physical altercation? It certainly could be, and it's certainly something defense can argue.
Yes. I mean, I guess it can create some reasonable doubt, because as of our technology today, we do not have a way of breaking those three different DNA profiles down to say definitively, here is who they all belong to. Now, 10 years from now, I wonder if that will be better. There's a lot of cases we look back on and go, well, we didn't have that technology then. Now we can look at this in a lot clearer light. So I'm curious, 10 years down the road, what exactly we're going to find in that. When we're getting closer and closer to a trial date here, we're seeing a lot of things thrown against the wall. Does it tell you, and obviously this is a capital case, when we've seen like theory after theory after theory being thrown out there by the defense, what does that tell you as a defense attorney? And even more so, when you were a prosecutor, when you saw things like that happen, or as a defense attorney, if you ever feel like we got to keep throwing things out here, what does that tell you about the strength of a case?
It tells me that if there was one overly compelling defense, you ride that horse off into the sunset. You don't want to dilute the potency of your defense by saying, oh, and it also could be these five other things. At least that's one strategy. Now, some folks just like to, you know, throw everything at the wall and hope that something sticks. But sometimes what that telegraphs is that there is not one main compelling defense that is going to win the day on this. And we've got to try to have some cumulative effect of all of these questions, all of these potential doubts, to hopefully rise up to reasonable doubt. And so that's kind of the way that I would view that.
Anything that you've heard from the Koberger camp that makes you think this will be successful on their part? I don't want to say an easy sell, but even like a palatable sell to a jury.
You know, certainly there are some cards that Koberger's team can play. One is some people would argue that there's not a distinct compelling motive for him to do this. Now, prosecution's going to say that he was sort of stalking these women and on social media and stuff like that, and certainly that factors into motive. But was there a motive for him to go and slash up, you know, four people whom he probably had never met before? That's one card. The DNA evidence of other folks under the fingernails, that's another card. But overcoming the DNA on the knife sheath is going to be difficult, and I don't think the planning argument's going to get him there.
What are you most interested in seeing in terms of discovery, evidence, all that has not been made public yet? What do you think could really seal the deal here against Koberger? And in theory, what is there anything out there that you think maybe is in the back pocket of Ann Taylor? I would think we would have heard it by now, but let's just say there's something out there. Either way, what do you think we could come up here that could affect this case in either direction?
There have been some hints in some of the public reports that I've read that allude to more of a buildup on this case than everybody knows about. More actions that Koberger may have taken. I mentioned earlier that there's some indication that he was at least visiting their social media profiles or possibly trying to interact with the victims on their social media profiles. At least that's what I've heard. I haven't seen the actual social media data. But if that information does exist, if there's more information about how this culminated, how things escalated, and about Koberger's actions before he allegedly committed the stabbings in a way that is consistent with killing four people with a knife, I think that could be very compelling and seal the deal for the prosecution. For the defense, that's a tough one. I'm not sure.
It's kind of like
I can't think of a card that some joker in their back pocket that I can't conceive of that's gonna show he's innocent.
Surprise, we have video of him in Hawaii with Chad and Lori Daybell, and they're all on the beach together having a great time. We just decided, well, we didn't think that was compelling enough, but we'll show our cards now.
Be a nightmare blunt rotation.
Exactly. There's not a lot that looks good here. The knife itself, the purchase, is something I'm very curious about. If it happened, if there is an Amazon receipt or Target or whatever the hell he may have bought it at, that seems like that could seal the deal pretty good. There are some people out there who have claimed that they have inside knowledge that is there. Again, just an allegation, but from some pretty trusted sources. Obviously, that'd be pretty damning if in fact that was there. And the fact that you have Ann Taylor, is it normal for someone to get ahead of something and say, we want the exclusion of his Amazon searches, and there was a ton of online things they wanted out, Google searches, everything, anything that like could point to, hey, maybe he bought this knife, or any sort of other conversations about what may have happened that may be out there in the ether. They're requesting early on that should not be into evidence. If there's nothing to hide in those areas, why would you be requesting that we can't look at your Amazon search history? There's plenty of crimes out there where no one even asks for that because there's nothing to see there, and you would know that on a defense end. But if you know there's something there that may not look very good, of course they're going to request to not have that in the case. By even stating that let's not look at Amazon, does that tell us there's something at Amazon?
It certainly could. On the other hand, some defense attorneys are very adamant about the rule of law and about the Fourth Amendment's protections against unreasonable searches and seizures. And perhaps Ann Taylor believes that there was not enough evidence to get into Amazon searches. There's a big controversy now with the government saying, oh, we think a person did something, so let me look at every aspect of their phone, their entire digital footprint for their whole life. And defense attorneys are pushing back and saying, hey, we do not want to establish that trend in criminal justice. That could be another reason why she would want to exclude those items.
Is that a legit argument, though? I mean, look, it's just another way of looking at information. In the past, before we have digital receipts and a far more detailed way of looking at everything we purchased, it would have just been a warrant to go and search a property and look for physical receipts that maybe somebody has in their trash, in their counter, in their drawer, wherever, looking for that exact same data, but we just now happen to store it in different ways. Are things like that they're asking for because they're digital, is that really a crazy request or something that, look, this is how the world works today, we better just get along with it and accept that if we committed a crime, there's a lot more places that we leave evidence than you would have had in 1982?
Absolutely. And that's a fair argument. And many courts have really cited that rationale for allowing broad digital device searches. On the other hand, we also don't want a system where somebody suspected of committing a crime, presumed innocent, and the cop thinks like, hey, I bet there is some evidence as to motive in his house. Judge, let's go look at every single thing in this house, every compartment, every closet, every drawer. They're probably going to find something. That's not what meets the level of articulable probable cause. Mm-hmm. And that principle can be translated to a cell phone. Some folks are saying, hey, we don't want to allow that broad access for those reasons.
Is it that broad on a cell phone? I mean, it's dialed down to communication. I mean, if there's something that involves the crime and you find it, great. I mean, it's one thing if you go out. I mean, it certainly does open more windows to blinders and just taking in information that you think fits a situation, even though it may not, because obviously that does happen sometimes. The more information you have, the more convoluted it could be, but also the more telling it can be, the more concrete it can be, simply because we have more things to take a look at.
Oh, certainly. And I think one question on that becomes, does the government have a right to take a look at it? Certainly they would want to. And certainly there are good reasons for thinking that, hey, we want the government to look at everything and get the most comprehensive cache of evidence that it can. On the other hand, you know, some people, their cell phones are very intimate to their lives, that maybe they're texting somebody about having AIDS or something, or maybe there is information that they are with some rogue political group. And that information can also get into the hands of the government if we allow too much unfettered access. And I think that is the concern on behalf of the defense board.
So you can't have AIDS and you can't belong to a crazy government group. That's the new rule. I'm kidding. but I get what you're saying. Yeah, where it could go into the wrong hands, or could be looked at as something entirely different that really has nothing to do with the case, that I guess one could put into some other category and use against someone. It's just there's so many angles on this case and so many directions that it, I guess, in theory could go, but it feels like it's narrowing even more by the day as we get closer and closer to a trial. Eric Faddis, defense attorney, former prosecutor, thank you for your insight on this ever crazy growing case.
My pleasure.
The latest true crime stories, expert breakdowns, and shocking twists all in one place. Press subscribe now to the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.